Blog Talk Radio.
Some sort of record broken yesterday. The number of videos that was uploaded on the Secular Talk channel. 13, I think. I told you going into yesterday's show there were 16 stories that I had planned. I got through 15 of them. 13 of them are on YouTube. I'm actually going to go back to the other one today. In fact, it's the second story because Lindsey Graham had a line. Not the Princess Bride line, not the Buttercup line, but a different line that's worthy of discussing further. So even after that gigantic, jam-packed show yesterday with the Republican debate breakdown, I still got one more for you. Apparently I just can't shut the fuck up about that debate, or debates, actually, because it's the undercard in the regular one. So other than that, though, today what you have to look forward to, we got a budget deal that the Democrats and the Republicans reached. I'm going to go ahead and give you just how fucked it is. I mean, usually these deals are horrific because you got to compromise and you got to meet halfway and yada, yada. But you'll see that this whole idea that anybody's a deficit hawk in Washington, utter nonsense. The Republicans are big on increasing the deficit as long as it suits their corporate overlords. So I have some specific numbers on that. Later on, Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump kind of have a little bit of a bromance. Isn't that adorable? Also, we have a Trump rally speaker who wants you to know that Trump is sent from God. This is the worst teaser ever done because I'm just giving away exactly what the stories are. Sarah Palin talks about Ben Carson and gives him advice because obviously if you're trying to win an election, you want to take advice from Sarah Palin. And later on in the show, we have a really interesting article about whether or not Jesus ever existed. So recently we did the story about what Jesus would have looked like if he did exist. But today we have, I'm going to lay out the case for you that he indeed didn't exist. So that's interesting. And much more, man. Sagging pants, getting people thrown in jail. The regular. All right, let's get started here, and we'll do it with the budget deal. The Democrats and Republicans reached a budget deal this week, and apparently the deficit hawks were nowhere to be found. So according to estimates by the Joint Committee on Taxation, quote, the cost of tax cuts alone is $621 billion over 10 years, all of which will be added to the deficit. On top of that, in the omnibus spending bill, Congress is delaying key funding provisions of the Affordable Care Act, which adds another $32 billion to the deficit. And all told, if the measure passes, Congress will be putting nearly $700 billion on the nation's credit card, and businesses would get about 60% of the cuts. And that amounts to $350 billion. So the breaks include $78 billion for keeping money in offshore tax havens, a very necessary break that we shouldn't crack down on at all, and $28 billion in give back for bonus depreciation, which is just a fancy way of saying let Wall Street write off capital investments, which is still just another fancy way of saying let's do corporate welfare. Now, to be clear about the total proposal here, there is some decent stuff in there, like extending the child tax credit and the earned income tax credit, and these are things that largely help out the middle class. These are things that I certainly support. This is what the Democrats push for in the bill. But in terms of what the Republicans got, I mean, the Republicans are the ones who loaded this up with corporate giveaways and loaded it up with stuff that would increase the deficit. So I need you to keep this in mind the next time you hear in the Republican debate or from other Republican politicians or right-wing commentators or what have you. You need to keep this in mind that they weren't interested in actually cutting the deficit or even being deficit neutral when it came time to doing the actual work, when it came time to crafting an actual bill. So remember, not only do they not care about the deficit, they'll blow up the deficit specifically to do more giveaways to the rich, specifically to help out Wall Street. That's exactly what's in this bill. $700 billion is being added to the deficit, and all of that could be cut back if you just take away the giveaways to the rich. And naturally, you can't have this conversation without diving into the heart of the issue here, which is money in politics and corruption. If we didn't have a system where these guys were paid by Wall Street and they got campaign contributions from Wall Street, if we didn't have that system, well, then why the fuck would they do this? They wouldn't do this. They wouldn't do giveaways to the people who are already rich. They wouldn't be looking out for them because they wouldn't have favoritism towards them. They would actually care about the American people. Why? Because in that scenario, we would be the ones that are doing their campaign contributions. It'd be clean elections, so you can't take private money, so you're not going to be beholden to any kind of special interests or corporate lobbyists or groups like that. But clearly, the system that we have right now, they're going in the opposite direction, and they're proudly and boastfully going in the opposite direction. Okay. Did I just make up a word? Is boastfully a word? Boastfully. If it's not a word, it's a word enough. You know what I mean? Like, it's close enough where you get what the fuck I'm saying. So, I get a pass. I like how I give myself passes for poor grammar. All right, now, back to the debate. Oh, God. Okay, I promise, this is the last thing that's directly from the debate. I don't know if I have any other things that are, like, related in one way or another, but... Lindsey Graham had a great line at the undercard debate the other night that shows you just how out of touch the Republican establishment is with the American people.
Wouldn't you like to export natural gas to cut Putin's legs out from under him? I'm not afraid of a guy riding around on a horse without his shirt. The guy's got a pair of shoes, he's got a full house, and he's walking all over Obama. Mike, the surge worked. It worked. George W. Bush made mistakes, but he did adjust. I blame Obama for ISIL, not Bush. I'm tired of beating on Bush. I miss George W. Bush. I wish you were president right now. We wouldn't be in this mess.
Where do I begin with that one? I miss beating on Bush. No, Lindsey, we all know you haven't beaten on Bush. Maybe ever, if you know what I'm saying. But to the serious angle of the story, really, you miss George W. Bush? Only somebody who's deeply embedded in the Republican establishment could say that. Nobody else is saying that. Now, Bush's rebound, you know, among the Republican base, his approval rating has shot up from the low of, what was it, negative 12 when he left office. So at least among the people who are already inclined to support him, he's bounced back somewhat. But in terms of the overall country, I mean, think about objectively, so take your opinion out of it, think about what Bush and his policies did to the country. Because there's no defense in that realm. So you had more deregulation, which added on to Clinton's deregulation, by the way. He also was bad in that department. You had more deregulation under Bush. It led to the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. He was an economic disaster. We net lost 646,000 private jobs under his administration. Guys, that's so bad that there's almost no comparison with any other president. Like Jimmy Carter, they say he was bad economically. He gained about 1 million jobs in his 4 years in office. Bush lost 646,000 private sector jobs in his time in office. He also grew government tremendously. This is a thing nobody talks about. The right-wingers like to say they love private sector jobs, they hate public sector jobs. Well, Bush exploded public sector jobs. And he put two wars on the national credit card, increased the debt tremendously, left us with a $1.4 trillion deficit, of which, by the way, Obama cut it to about $486 billion. And then, oh yeah, he ripped up the Constitution, pissed on it, and shit on it. Due process, gone. Protection from unreasonable search and seizure, gone. Right to privacy, gone. Habeas corpus, gone. You know, torture. We did torture under the Bush administration. We did an illegal war under the Bush administration. International law is schminternational schlaw. Doesn't mean anything. This is what you want back? No, but he was a disaster on every front. I'm not sure there's a single area you can name where George W. Bush left us off better. And I'm going strictly by numbers here. I'm going strictly by economic data. I'm going strictly by job creation and deficit numbers and, you know, foreign policy blunders and number of civilians killed, number of American personnel killed. Every single area. In 2008 and 2009, everybody was facepalming. Nobody liked it, but he's so far up his own ass, Lindsey Graham, that he's like, man, I sure do want him back over Obama, let me tell you. And he blamed Obama for ISIS there. Incredible, man, incredible. No, Lindsey, the problem is that we did the invasion of Iraq in the first place and destabilized the region and hit it with a sledgehammer. ISIS rose out of that mess. For you to blame Obama for that makes no sense, because whenever we were to pull back from certain regions in Iraq, which eventually we're going to have to, nobody wants to stay there forever and do a permanent occupation, whenever we pull back from certain areas, of course it's going to go to shit. There are no liberals who said, hey, if we get out of there, it's going to be a utopia and there's going to be flowers and rainbows and everybody's going to get a puppy and we're going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. No, we knew that the region was going to go to shit, but our bed was made. That was written on the wall from when we did the invasion in the first place. So the question is, do you want to rip off the Band-Aid fast or slow? And what did mommy always tell you? Rip it off fast, get the pain over with early. So we have no right to be there to begin with. It was an illegal war. We attacked the wrong country. So we have to get out. Yes, it might go to shit, but now we're out of it. If we stay there, we'll exacerbate the problems further, or we have to occupy it forever in order to tamper down sectarian violence that we want nothing to do with and the American people want nothing to do with. So these guys are amazing. It's adorable that they say, let's do revisionist history, in the sense that I want to go back and blame Obama and tell Obama not to withdraw. So they're willing to do revisionist history, but they're only willing to go back so many years. They're not willing to go back far enough to say, you know, hey, maybe the West shouldn't have drawn Iraq's fake borders on a map and then stolen the oil along with Britain. Maybe we shouldn't have done that. Maybe that'll lead to some sectarian strife. Doesn't want to do that and doesn't want to say, hey, you know, maybe we should rewind the clock back a little further and say maybe George W. Bush shouldn't have invaded in the first place. Because it's a fake country, so the country shouldn't exist to begin with. But if you're going to set up the country and there's a strong man in there, last thing you want to do is get rid of the strong man that keeps the sectarian tensions under, because now you're there in the middle of it, and what are you going to do? But, you know, actually, to be clear about this, Lindsey Graham has said in the past, I know because we covered the story, his proposal is to stay there forever. It is to stay there forever. He said, I believe the quote was, you don't leave. Quote, you don't leave. When somebody said, what do you want to do, stay in Iraq forever? So there you have it, man. I mean, if you want to vote for that party, you want to vote for that guy, you want to vote for that philosophy, that ideology, well, there it is right in front of you. But, you know, I can guarantee you that if you care about facts, this isn't good for the country, and this isn't good for anybody. Okay. Whew. Now, this is kind of interesting. So yesterday we went through the show at 800 miles an hour because I had so many stories to get to. Today I'm back to normal. I got a normal number of stories. But apparently I can still sense my flow here. My rhythm is like stuck in the gotta go mode that we had yesterday. Woosah, man. I could relax here. No need for me to speed it up. All right, now I want to go to a funny story, because after you discuss George W. Bush, we all need to relax a little bit. So, one goofball praises another goofball. Both of them are potentially dangerous goofballs. Vladimir Putin praised Donald Trump in a recent media appearance that he did in Russia. He said, quote, he is a very flamboyant man, interesting choice of words, very talented, no doubt about that. He is an absolute leader of the presidential race as we see it today. He says that he wants to move to another level of relations. That sounds somewhat dirty. To a deeper level of relations with Russia. How can we not welcome that? Of course we welcome it. So then, when he was asked to elaborate on Trump's controversial statements, Putin said, "It is not our affair to determine his worthiness. That's up to the United States voters. As for his internal political issues and his turns of speech, which he uses to raise his popularity, I repeat, it's not our job to judge them." Okay, so people are kind of going a little far with this in the headlines. They're saying that Putin called him brilliant. I read his statements. I didn't see the word brilliant. I think what they're interpreting is when he says he's a very flamboyant man, very talented, no doubt about that. He is an absolute leader of the presidential race. People are viewing that as like, ooh, very positive, bromance in the making. That's a little bit of a stretch, but nonetheless, these are, you know, the most positive comments I think I've ever seen from Russia on anybody in America. And people are wondering, well, what's the reason for that? I think it's twofold. One, I think, is that they're both authoritarians, and as the old saying in the streets go, real recognize real, although in this case it's like fake recognize fake. But also, it has to do with Syria. So Trump, even though he contradicts himself roughly 983 times a day in every single media appearance he does, and he doesn't even acknowledge it, or when he's called out for it, he just brushes it off. One of the things that he said recently was, yeah, I'd be fine with Vladimir Putin continuing to bomb ISIS in Syria. I'd work with him. I'd talk with him. It is what it is. And that's something, believe it or not, I in the past have mentioned. If somebody's going to fight ISIS, and I just don't want it to be us because we've already been fighting for over a decade different jihadists, and we've objectively made the problem worse. So, you know, let us sit on the bench a little bit. Somebody else take over. Now, problem is, you know, Vladimir Putin, there's been reports of Russia actually killing civilians, some of them not credible reports from faux human rights organizations that are aligned with Syrian rebels. Others seem somewhat legit. So I'm not sure if I support them leading it now because of how brazen they are in their attacks, and they probably care even less than the U.S. does about civilian casualties. But I think that's what's at the heart of it. What's at the heart of it is Putin looks at Trump, and he sees a guy who made those comments. He thinks, well, maybe there's some sense of working things out in one way or another, as opposed to jack-offs like Chris Christie, who's like, yeah, I'd shoot down a Russian plane to protect ISIS in Syria. That's what I do, and do World War III, yeah. But what I'd say to Vladimir Putin, and I'm no friend of Vladimir Putin, but what I'd say to him is, dude, Trump talks out of his anus. Like, if you think he meant that when he said that, nobody knows what he means. Trump doesn't even know what he means when he says, yeah, no, I'm fine with Vladimir Putin bombing ISIS. Because then 3.5 seconds later, he'll say, you know, we should be in there bombing civilians in Syria and in Iraq. I want to attack the families of ISIS, not the ISIS guys, the families. So what the fuck, before you said we should sit out, it's not our fight, let Putin do it, let everybody else do it, he did say that at one time, and then he changed to let's torture people even if it doesn't work, let's purposefully bomb civilians, and we need to lead the world in 900 ways. So if Putin really thinks like, ooh, a rational actor here, it ain't a rational actor, and let's be clear, Vladimir Putin is also, I would argue, not necessarily a rational actor. Okay, so keep everything in context here, but it's fucking hilarious that the guy who has pictures and does propaganda of himself working out and on horses without a shirt, like, yeah, I'm a strongman leader, that guy is now praising our version of that, the capitalist billionaire buffoon who thinks he's smarter and better than he is, who, believe you me, given enough time, he'll also be taking those absurd pictures because this is how people pump themselves up if they have these kind of authoritarian personalities where there's deep-seated insecurity. I must make the people like me. How? I don't know. Goofy photo ops. Let's do it. So like I said, fake recognize fake. Let me do one more here, and then we'll take a break. Do I want to do the Donald Trump one? No, I'm gonna do the Sarah Palin one. I like my indecisiveness on this menial, non-important thing here. Yeah, I'm going to do the Sarah Palin one because it's funny. Sarah Palin was asked to give some advice to Ben Carson moving forward in his presidential campaign. This is, of course, the last person you would want to give election advice to anybody. She lost horribly. Nevertheless, here we are. Sarah, take it away.
Ben Carson has been a favorite among conservatives, but lately he's dropped in the polls. What would you advise him to do?
Oh, I so admire him and his intelligence, and I love even, J.D., his innocence, if you will, and I say that with all he's not jaded and tainted, it seems like, with that political process. That, man, it's brutal, isn't it? I mean, it can just wear you down, and yet he still seems to be able to take another step forward. Yeah, it's a tough road in front of him, but as long as he keeps being candid and speaking truth and not letting political consultants or those around him who would ever want to kind of change his message, just not letting anybody try to shape you and mold you into something that some consultant wants you to be, that's a big mistake. But it is tough jumping up there on a national stage when you hadn't been there before to really dig into the idiosyncrasies of some of the issues and the details of some of our, especially foreign policy issues. So it's a long, hard road in front of him, but, you know, I just have all the respect in the world for Dr. Carson.
Oh, that was precious. Oh, that was adorable. I have so much to say about that. So at the end, everybody should have been cringing because this is Sarah Palin talking about, yeah, gosh, you know, the details and the idiosyncrasies of foreign... She just learned that word like 8 minutes ago. Of foreign policy. Yes, that's the hard part. Gosh, golly gee, I can see Russia from my backyard. Okay, she suffered in that department, clearly. She had no clue what she was doing. She said, I could see Russia from my backyard. She was asked about the Bush Doctrine, to which she responded, and she's like, well, what part, faction of the Bush Doctrine are you talking about? The Bush Doctrine is preemptive war. She was running for president and didn't fucking know that. She apparently didn't know dick about Hamas. That's a recurring theme with people who try to become president in the U.S. who don't know anything. Usually Hamas and Hezbollah are their weak points. They're like, huh, who? Who? Ben Carson said in a speech, he referred to Hamas as hummus. And actually, to be fair, my interpretation of it, I didn't hear Hamas or hummus. I heard Hamas. So like a mix in between H-A-M-U-S is kind of what I heard. But either way, he don't know about it. He don't know anything about it. This is the guy who said in the debate, we now know that China is fighting in Syria. To which every political analyst around the world was like, okay, what? No. No, that is indeed not true. That, no. Who let this guy on the stage? This is fucking crazy. But that's why, you know, she's giving the little wink and the nod, like, ha, he doesn't know shit. I don't know shit. I'm for you, Ben. I'm rooting for you, buddy. Oh, my God, it's so sad to watch this. And, like, I often think to myself, how can other people, like, if you consider yourself a Republican or a conservative or right-wing or whatever, how can you not see that and just go, oh, my God, these people are in my party? People, oh my God, I can't believe that this is somebody. And it's not like, you know, their popularity is something you can scoff at. Ben Carson briefly held the lead in the Republican primary. Sarah Palin has a dedicated and loyal fan base. I mean, I guess you can get some percentage of people to support anything, but let's just say the numbers are a little scary when you look at the totality of the right-wing base and how many of them really are. Yeah, Sarah's great. Ben's so smart. He knows so much. And then notice the point she made about being candid and don't listen to the political consultants. My response to that is, no, Sarah, political consultants were invented precisely for people like you and Ben Carson. You know, like, if you know what you're talking about, and you have political consultants that are trying to mold you to act a certain way and be politician-like with your finger like this when you talk and speak in a way that's not doesn't really sound human with weird, awkward pauses. Okay, that then I get, yeah, blow off the consultants because they're not helping you. But when you don't know anything about anything, when you are a twat waffle on the national stage, well, then you need the political consultants so that they can be there to tell you, hey, slapstick, China's not in Syria, all right? Hey, Sarah, you can see Russia from your backyard. That doesn't mean you know anything about foreign policy. Okay, pumpkin? The political consultants were made for you. And then I'll leave you guys to make the jokes with, I admire Ben's intelligence. It says a lot about you, Sarah, doesn't it? And, you know, his innocence is what I like also. That's another way of saying, yet again, he doesn't really know Dick. I really don't know Dick. So we're one and the same. Vote for him. Okay. Let's take a break here. And when we come back, I have a speaker at a Donald Trump rally who had a horrible personal experience, but he's going to share with you not only the personal experience, but why he thinks you should vote for Trump. Needless to say, he drives the car off into a ditch at that portion of the speech. And a fascinating drone report from NBC News. We're going to hear from the drone operators themselves as to what they feel about what we've been doing. So keep that in mind. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And the First Amendment, a scary number of people are cool with repealing it. We'll talk about that as well and much more. Stay right there, guys.
Thank you.
I got the Trumpinator waiting for you here. Okay. Let's do it. A speaker at a Donald Trump rally who had a horrible personal experience is going to explain to you why he thinks you should vote for Trump. And then he claims something that's just outrageous at the very end here.
Hello, everybody. I'll get right to the point. On March 2nd, 2008, my son was shot dead in the street like a dog by an illegal alien gangbanger, 18th Street gangbanger. He was on his third gun charge. Now, we hear all these gun people talk about banning guns, but you have an illegal alien on his third gun charge, never been deported, and the guy shot him through his hand into his head and killed him. It was vicious. I heard the gunshots, of course. I ran outside and I couldn't believe it. Even today, I couldn't believe it. I remember telling him, man, I told you, this people are crazy out there. I had just told him the day before. And, you know, our kids don't believe that, you know. And that's why we need Donald Trump, because Donald Trump is going to make it safe again, you know. Donald Trump is going to make it safe for your kids. My son is dead. I can't fix that. I wish I could. But I have another son, 17 years old. He was 8 at the time. Now, he's 17. I saw him the other day. Man, you know you're older than your brother now, you know, and it's really sad. And Trump is the only person that reached out to me out of all the politicians, all the black politicians in L.A. Nobody cares. It's all about illegal aliens. That's all they care about. They don't care about us as Americans. Trump wants to make America first, okay? We need that. Our kids deserve to grow up. This is our time to live on the earth. Why do we have to be under this oppression from illegal aliens and they're getting the American dream and we're getting the American nightmare? You know, it's not fair, and the only way we can fix it is with Donald Trump. I don't see no other way. If it was there, it would have happened. Before Trump, there was nothing going on. Now that he's here, they're scared, and we have to make sure it happens because it's going to protect all of us and make us safe. And we got to stand with Trump, and you have to trust him the way I do, because I believe that he was sent from God. Thank you.
The audience ate that up when he says at the end, he was sent from God. If that's who God sent, I don't want to worship that God. That God can blow me. Really? That's the guy who you're going to send? The buffoon with the meerkat on his head, who's clearly bigoted, who wants to prevent all Muslims from entering the U.S., who has horrible policy ideas, who contradicts himself every 8 seconds. I mean, ugh. You want to talk about the polar opposite, because that audience is full of Christians. The polar opposite of the hippie Jesus message in parts of the New Testament. That would be Donald Trump. But, okay, you can say, Kyle, he just, you know, that was just a throwaway comment at the end. He's not literally saying he was sent from God. Fair enough. He's just overflowing with adoration and love and oozing with affection for Donald Trump. But look at some of the stuff that he said there, because this really is authoritarianism 101. So he said his main reason for supporting Trump is Donald Trump is going to make it safe again. That's what he said. Well, you know, Republicans historically have been known to play on fear. You know, they make you scared of the other, and then they sell the solution to the other. So Donald Trump's solution, one of the solutions is, you know, deport all undocumented immigrants, even though the overwhelming majority are doing jobs that we need, and they're good people, and ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. So my response to that would be, you say he's going to make it safe again. Safe for whom? Safer innocent Muslim Americans who make up just a little bit less than 1% of the population? Not safe for them. Safe for Hispanic Americans? No, definitely not. We heard him say it when he announced his campaign. You know, the Mexicans, they're rapists. I assume some of them are good people. Some of them are good people, but they're rapists. Okay. No, he's not going to make it safe. he's going to exploit minority communities to get nativists riled up to support him blindly. The same thing any authoritarian regime does. And most importantly here, guys, to his point that, like, oh my God, Donald Trump is going to save us from the undocumented immigrants, or as he says, the illegal aliens, and that's the problem, that's what we need to focus on. Do I feel bad for him with his personal story about his son dying? Absolutely. What decent human being would not feel bad about that? But the reality is that there already is a policy that under the Democratic administration, President Obama, when he did his immigration reform executive orders, crystal clear, one of the provisions is if you're an undocumented immigrant and you commit a crime, you're gone. You're deported. There aren't many people who disagree with that. You know, Republican, Democrat, if you're an undocumented immigrant and you commit a crime, well, then, yeah, you either lock the person up for committing a crime, wasting more tax dollars and resources, or you deport them. I'm in favor of that. Obama's in favor of that. The majority of Democrats are in favor of that, and Republicans are in favor of that. So you're arguing against a straw man. You know, this idea that, like, oh, the Republicans are the only ones who care about fighting the undocumented immigrants when they commit crimes. No, the Democrats are on that page, too. But we're all on that page. The only difference is with the Republicans and specifically with Donald Trump, not only would he kick out the undocumented immigrants who have committed crimes, which, again, most of us agree with, but he would kick out innocent undocumented immigrants, people who've been here for 5 years, 10 years. They have family here. They have friends. They hold down a job. They're a key part of their communities. They bleed America. They are American in every conceivable sense except the literal sense in which they're applying to try to become Americans, and they're waiting for this long process, and they're waiting for the government to recognize them. And we know that most undocumented immigrants are good people. And what happens when you do get rid of all of them, as Donald Trump wants to do? Well, we know because Alabama recently, or a certain place in Alabama did that. Vice News had a great report where they found that the second they kicked them all out, all the business owners were like, oh, God, we need them back. Okay, can we allow them back in here? And you had, like, stereotypical, like, boss white guys on farms and factories and stuff. They would interview them, and they'd say, you know, the white man just doesn't have a good work ethic. I'm going to tell you that right now. We need them Mexicans. They work hard, and they got family values. And so all of a sudden, the narrative, like the typical racist narrative of, like, you know, white people have family values and they work hard, the Protestant work ethic, that was flipped on its head the second they kicked out the undocumented immigrants. And apparently the white people came in, they didn't want to do the job or they didn't do it well. And they're like, okay, no, we need the undocumented immigrants. So let's be decent human beings. You know, do a deal to, yes, allow the people who are here and are not criminals, allow them to stay here. And then, yes, I understand we can do border security, we can do protection, we can set up a system for only doing legal immigration, but you have to deal with the people who are here that are not criminals. Fine, deport the criminals, I'm with you. But if they're innocent, if they're good people who are just here trying to live the American dream, don't take that away from them. Don't do collective punishment. Okay. All right, now we're going to move on to a very serious story about drones. Where is it? Here it is. Okay. NBC News spoke to drone operators, and they're going to tell you what's happening in their own words, and it's powerful.
We're very callous about any real collateral damage, ruined. Whenever that possibility came up, most of the time it was a guilt by association, or sometimes we didn't even consider other people that were on the screen.
It weighs on your conscience, it weighs on your soul, it weighs on your heart.
...544 to 568 drone strikes have been done in the Middle East and North Africa. 2,000 to 4,500 militants have been killed.
What you're shooting at is human, the easier it becomes for you to just follow shots when you come down.
Up to 1,000 civilians have been killed.
It's dark, and you're watching lights blinking on and off. And I'm just thinking about what's happening on the other end. What did I just facilitate by helping with this? What did we facilitate by helping with this?
Use terms like fun-sized terrorists or little, non-sequitur terms like cutting the grass before it grows too long, referring to the possibility of killing children or anything like that. It was, you say these things as sort of a mental exercise to somehow rationalize the possibility or perhaps deal with the reality that it's already come to pass that you will possibly kill children.
I took a shower, put on my clothes, walked to the job, sat down for an intelligence briefing, went out and flew the mission, went back home, and drank myself to sleep.
Every night?
Every night.
The one common thing was, after every shift, was a lot of alcohol. A lot of alcohol consumption.
It was the culture there. Nobody had an alcohol problem. It was everybody drank.
It became a sleep aid, really.
Everybody did something to take an edge off, to reform reality so you didn't have to think about what you did.
They haven't honored the Constitution. They haven't honored that. They should be fighting for that more than anything. And that's why I voted for Obama. Because I thought he was a constitutional lawyer, so he would. And I'm just really disappointed. As Americans, we respect human dignity, even when we're threatened. Which is why I have prohibited torture and work to make sure our use of new technology like drones is properly constrained.
He's increased drone strikes by 894%. You know, people assume that there's some sort of high-minded, strict, rigid, professional process that's in place. So you don't need to worry about it. The people who are protecting you are doing so with the highest level of scrutiny, and they're making sure to avoid civilian casualties in all circumstances. And this is just a clear example or a clear case of good guy, bad guy, our guys being the good guys, their guys being the bad guys, and rest assured and rest easy, they're only going after top ISIS guys and Al-Qaeda guys and Boko Haram guys and Al-Shabaab guys and other jihadists. And we know through so many layers of vetting and oversight that we're getting the right people and we're doing the right thing. That's simply not true. It's not true in the oversight sense, and it's also not true in the legal process sense. So the way our Constitution works, you need Congress to declare war before you do any kind of military action in any country. What we're seeing right now is we're doing military strikes in at least 7 countries, and we haven't declared war in any of them. I mean, I guess you could say in Iraq and Afghanistan, but we're still coasting off previous authorizations for use of military force there. But in Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, in these places, no. We just go there. We bomb, and everybody just assumes, like, oh, it's cool, it's totally legal, totally constitutional. It's not constitutional. It's not legal. Not only do you have to abide by the law and the Constitution and get approval to do drills in each of these places, but you'd also need to abide by international law, which we're not doing, which we blow off any time it's inconvenient to us. And understand, I mean, some people would say, well, just totally ban drones in every way, shape, and form in every case. No, I'm actually fine with having them as long as you go through the same process that you would expect of any other nation if they were to use drones. Could you imagine if China or Iran decided to drone a KKK haven in Alabama and they ended up killing civilians? And then they turned around and said to us, when we get mad and we want to strike back, they say, no, 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 wait, totally cool, don't worry, it wasn't an act of war. It was just some drone strikes. We didn't mean it as an act of war. We'd say, you fucking did a military strike on U.S. soil. That's a war, bitch. So why is it any different when we do it to Pakistan or Yemen or Somalia or any of these places? No, it isn't any different. And again, the civilian death rate is even worse than what you saw there. Those are old numbers. Because we just got the drone papers, which were being called like the new Snowden leaks. Snowden had the NSA leaks. Now we have the drone papers leaked. And we know that internally, the government admits back and forth in casual conversation, 90% civilian death rate with our drone program. So what you're doing is not legal because you haven't gone through the proper process and gotten individual declarations of war in all the different countries. It's not constitutional. It's a violation of international law. And it's not effective. I mean, even if you went through all the legal process but you were getting all the right people, it's still wrong and you still got to go through the proper legal processes. But okay, you got the right people. No. You're violating all these different laws and rules and regulations, and you're getting 90% civilians. What the fuck are you doing? This is simply a rogue action from a rogue nation. And this is why guys like Noam Chomsky, and he gets a lot of shit for saying this, but he's saying it for good reasons. This is why he says this is the largest terrorist campaign in the world right now. It's the U.S. government and our drone strikes. Now, again, people get all mad when you say that, but get to the core of what their argument is. Their argument is, wait, no. When we do it, it's not terrorism by definition because we're doing it, because we're the good guys by definition, and our intent is all that matters, and that's the end of the conversation. But no. Actions are what matters. So if they kill civilians, well, that's wrong, and that's terrorism. If we kill civilians, that's wrong, and that is, fill in the blank here, terrorism. Hashtag logic. And some people say, well, wait, no, targeting civilians on purpose, we, on the other hand, we're not really doing that. Well, maybe there was a time in the past when we weren't doing that, when the idea was only target, you know, individuals who you know are guilty, and then, oops, we got a few civilians who were standing around them. That's one level of culpability. But over time now, we've graduated, in a bad sense, to we're going to target you know, a group full of civilians because there may be one Taliban guy there, or maybe not. So when we attack funerals, for example, that's the classic example. We attack Taliban operatives' funerals. We knew women and children were there, but we may get a few more Taliban guys, so we attack anyway. There's signature strikes, personality strikes, and double taps. These are the three kinds of drone strikes. Signature strike is when we know who we're getting. Personality strike is when we know who we're getting. Signature is when we don't know who we're getting, but we attack anyway. And double tap is when we attack, circle back around, and then blow up the first responders. I don't give a fuck what you try to wiggle out of there. That's terrorism. That is state terrorism. So I need everybody to understand what their government is doing in their name. And I need you to understand that we all should get up and we should oppose this. In the same way that people say, like, okay, you know, moderate Muslims in the Muslim world, people will often say, where are they speaking up against the extremists? Well, they do. We cover the stories on the show, multiple stories on the show. 1.5 million in India signed a fatwa against ISIS. You have NU, which is the biggest Muslim group in the world in Indonesia. 50 million people deep. They're doing a counter-extremism program to combat ISIS theologically. So, okay, there it is, right? But as Americans, we pay taxes to our government. They do things in our name around the world. Now, we don't want them to kill civilians, target civilians on purpose, or have super high, civilian death rates. So, yeah, let's stand up and fight against it and say, I don't want my money going to that. I want my money going to universal health care and universal education and infrastructure spending and stuff that makes sense, stuff where I'm getting something for my money. I'm not paying for you to go around and do terrorism in my name and make people mad at me and breed anti-Americanism. So, and it is, not only is it immoral and unethical, it is counterproductive. It does create more terrorists. And like I said, those numbers are outdated. We now know in the drone papers, 90% civilian death rate with the drones. I'm not saying you ban drones completely, but if you're going to do drone strikes, you have to go by through the proper legal steps. So you got to go through Congress, you got to abide by the Constitution, you got to abide by international law and NATO and the UN, and you have to have stricter oversight to make sure you function in a somewhat reasonable legal way, as opposed to what we have now, which is a bunch of drunk assholes who get off on killing people. And these are the drone operators themselves telling you that, where they referred to kids as, quote, fun-sized terrorists, and they would say, hey, whatever, you killed some kids, we, quote, cut the grass. You're going to be a terrorist anyway, so might as well kill them now. No, no, no. In that scenario, it would not be them that are the terrorists. It would be you that are the terrorists. Now, let's go to a very depressing story about just how much people don't give a shit about civil liberties, human rights. So a little experiment was done recently where a fake petition was set up to repeal the First Amendment, and Yale students were asked to sign it, and the results are very depressing.
What we're calling for is a petition to repeal the First Amendment. Just get rid of it. Blow it up. Get rid of it.
Just as a reminder, the First Amendment protects the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, and, oh yeah, freedom of petition.
So what we're calling for is to repeal the First Amendment.
I think it's fantastic.
Okay. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Love it.
Thank you.
I'll try to bring you
some. I appreciate it.
I appreciate what you're trying to do.
I think the Constitution should be one big safe space, right? Her feelings.
Yeah,
no. That should not be protected.
Yeah. I totally agree with where at.
I think it's a living, breathing document, the Constitution.
Yeah.
It's literally not written in stone.
Yeah.
And the guys who wrote it, they were slave owners.
Yeah, that's true.
What do they know about how we live today? So we want to change. Because you shouldn't be exposed to things you don't want to hear,
yeah.
You know? That's not right. But, I mean, like, making fun of people is just not cool.
Right.
I shouldn't be protected. Thanks a lot.
Great.
I appreciate that. Because, you know what? Microaggressions should not be protected, and making fun of people is not cool. And, yeah, sucks. Thank you very much.
Interesting. Good for you. That's great.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man.
Well,
take care.
I like what you're doing.
Okay.
I like
that. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
In under 60 minutes, they got over 50 signatures to repeal the First Amendment. Okay, so I have a lot to say about this. First of all, let's just get all the facts out there. This is done by a right-wing group. You saw they were running this on Fox News. So I'm going to get to what their intent was and the idea that they were trying to push in doing this. But first, let's focus on the substance. So is that wrong and outrageous that students at Yale would agree, yeah, get, you know, repeal the First Amendment? Why? Because we're against microaggressions, we're against hurting people's feelings, and, you know, freedom of speech, it does not extend as far as making people feel like shit and hurting their feelings. That is outrageous, that is wrong, that is fucked up. The whole idea of freedom of speech is that we're trying to protect the most egregious speech. You don't need to agree with the speech to agree that somebody has a right to say it. You know, it's the old Voltaire quote, and, you know, I don't even know if it's just him. I think it's been attributed to Oscar Wilde at times and Noam Chomsky. But if you don't believe in freedom of speech for those who you disagree with the most, you don't believe in it at all. So the whole idea is we're not here to protect the speech that's apple pie is delicious and mother is fantastic and aren't rainbows pretty, because we all agree to that. So that doesn't need protection. It gets protection, but it doesn't need it. What needs it is when somebody marches down the street and starts screaming, you know, racial shit. That's bullshit, but, you know, they have a right to do it. And we believe in this in such an absolutist way in the U.S., rightfully so, that we have the Skokie case and others where the ACLU, which is typically called a liberal organization, They defended the KKK because the KKK wanted to have a peaceful march in a majority-minority town. It was blacks or Jews or what have you. So that's how much we believe in freedom of speech, to the point where the ACLU, who hates the KKK and everything they stand for, they say, I'm defending their right to X. That doesn't mean I'm defending X. So they want to march and say the N-word this or, you know, kike that or whatever. They can do it. They have a right to do it. You know, we don't agree with this speech. In fact, we hate the speech. But the answer to bad speech is more speech. It's not censoring speech. So this idea of what people are now calling the SJWs, the social justice warriors, who are so liberal that they're authoritarian in their liberalism, I do think that exists. I do think that's a problem. I do think we need to speak out against it, because in my view, they just missed the point of being a liberal or understanding what it means to believe in rights and civil liberties. They're concrete. They're off the table. They're non-negotiable. You don't get to take it away when, you know, I believe in your rights except for when I don't. Well, then you don't believe in them. So the whole idea is you've now crossed the line from being a liberal or being a progressive into being an authoritarian, because you're saying, I'm so against you offending anybody, and particularly minority groups, or, you know, just the other gender or whatever, I'm so against you offending them that if you do offend them, well, I want to censor you. I want to get you in trouble. I want to kick you off campus. I want to literally repeal the First Amendment in the Constitution, which is one of the best legal precedents and constitutional precedents ever in the history of man. That's a problem. That's a problem. Liberalism needs to be tolerant of free speech, even if the speech is grotesque. The only exceptions are direct threats of violence, like go and kill this person whose address is X, Y, and Z. For obvious reasons, you can't do that. And libel and slander, which are really, really hard to prove. But outside of that, all systems go, man. It's a free-for-all. Everybody say whatever you want. So they're wrong about that. On the substance here, these people on campus are just totally missed the point of believing in rights. But now, let's get to what they were trying to do here on Fox News with this right-wing group, whatever point they were trying to prove. What they're trying to do, the point they're trying to make is dead wrong, because they're trying to say, hey, stupid liberals, look at what you're doing. This is what the left stands for. The left, the left, the left, the left, the left, the left. No, no. See, now you're generalizing and you're dead wrong. Because, oh, what, you don't think the right has sacred cows on in this same speech arena? Oh, who are you kidding? What do I have here? Look at this. PPP poll. 49% of Iowa Republicans want to ban Islam. You guys are the same thing, man. We believe in free speech, except when we don't. We don't like that religion, so ban that religion from the United States of America. And then they're the ones who make videos like this. And like, look at the left! They're trying to censor things they don't agree with! Stupid liberals! When can we ban Islam? Can we get on that now? No, no, no. You guys are just as bad, if not worse in many respects. I got more for you. Another PPP poll. Quote, 57% of Republicans say dismantle the Constitution and make Christianity the national religion. Oh, and look at these guys. Ha ha, stupid liberals. You want to censor people. You don't believe in the Constitution. Oh my God, how un-American are they? They don't believe in the Constitution. 57% of Republicans say dismantle the Constitution and make Christianity the national religion. So make no mistake about it, guys. While are these Yale students wrong? While that is that the case? Absolutely, that's the case. They're dead wrong. Don't fall for the propaganda bullshit angle of this story, because that angle is what they're trying to say is, oh, man, it's the liberals who are irrational. It's the liberals who want to censor everybody. It's the left, broadly speaking, who are to blame. Run into the arms of the reasonable right-wingers here on Fox News. My ass cheeks. You're just as bad as the authoritarian left, if not, let's face it, worse. Because at least for all the flaws of the authoritarian left, and I disagree with them on many things, they ain't trying to bring back torture. They ain't trying to get rid of due process. They ain't trying to do random wars with random countries and massacre innocent civilians. They're not trying to get a state religion in the U.S. So, you know, spare me your nonsense of, it's them, it's them! look in the mirror, dipshit. You also are anti-constitutional and un-American in many ways. But that's why, hey, that's why, you know, this show exists. I'm bitching here, but in reality, I should be happy because they're just opening up a market for my show and for others where we say, we're actually fucking principled across the board here. So I'm against banning speech, you know, that people would call racist or sexist or whatever. I don't give a shit about microaggressions. I think that's made up. I don't care. Your feelings are hurt, whatever. Everybody's feelings are hurt from time to time. Get over it. So we don't believe in safe spaces. We don't believe in any of this restriction or censorship when it comes to free speech and free expression. But we also don't want to ban Islam, which is a restriction on free speech and free expression, and we don't want to dismantle the Constitution and make Christianity a national religion. So reject both extremes, and you guys know where we'll meet. Okay, I got to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll get to 800 different things. Stay right there. We'll be right back. All right, we're back, guys. And we're going to move right along here to Fox Business and an interesting issue that they had. Oh, did I not clip it out? Oh, I'm such a dick. Oh, my God, I'm such a dick. I hate myself. Okay, I think... Yeah, I got it enough here. I actually don't have the clip, like, precisely cut out here, but whatever. Guess you'll have to listen to the whole thing and not bits and pieces. No biggie. I love how I'm just talking to myself and none of you know what the fuck I'm saying. It's a clip about the Fox Business people being uncomfortable with somebody being sworn in on a Quran. There's quite a bit to say about this. Okay. We finally found a story that makes the Republicans on Fox Business back off of mixing religion and state together. Typically, the right-wing pundits love that. Typically, the Republican politicians love that. Well, now, they pump the brakes a little bit. I wonder why.
David, let me ask you a question. You see the story this morning in the New York Post. This is a Brooklyn judge. She was sworn in on the Quran. I wonder what your – it's sort of stirring some controversy on social media this morning. I wonder what your take is on this.
It's unprecedented, and I've not seen the story, so
it's actually not unprecedented. In 2006, actually, back in 2006, there was another – judge who was actually, in 2006, Minnesota Representative U.S. Keith Ellison also did so. He was sworn in on the Quran. It's creating such controversy online. I wonder what your thoughts are.
May not be unprecedented, Maria, but it is certainly rare, and it's not something you're going to find even the slightest minority saying they support here in America. And it'll be interesting to watch the developments on this. I can assure you the next president of the United States will have his hand or her hand on the Bible, not on the Quran.
Yeah, I just wonder what the implications are of this, you guys. Any thoughts here in terms of, you know, what the overriding tenets are if you are sworn in by the Quran? What does that mean in terms of...
It's such a sensitive subject,
yeah,
especially when it comes to it's guiding their higher beliefs and powers that dictate their actions and decisions, right? And
yeah.
Swearing on that, especially right now, we know we're at war right now with radical Islam that do believe in the Quran and can actually distort it. So it's so sensitive right now that politicizing this and swearing in a judge, I just think it's not the right time or place for it.
Well, we'll see what happens with this.
It's not the right time or place for it. I'll make a deal with you guys right now. She can't get sworn in on the Quran. Nobody can get sworn in on the Quran. And nobody can get sworn in on the Bible. You gonna take me up on that? I'll wait. No, they wouldn't do that. And this is what's so frustrating about, you know, the right-wing crowd in general, is that they'll come out swinging. And they're right about this, but they'll, you know, hey, we don't want Sharia law in America. There's less than 1% of the U.S. population is Muslim. They're not coming to Oklahoma, dude. It's not happening. But nonetheless, in the realm of ideas, are they right that we shouldn't be governed by Sharia law? Of course, that's the biggest no-brainer ever, ever. But what's so frustrating about them is then they turn around and they're like, can we squeeze Jesus into the science class? I really want creationism and or intelligent design to be right alongside evolution. And I really want prayer in school. And I really want my religious values forced via the government. And you're just fucking complete and utter hypocrites. I don't want your Narnia voodoo mythological nonsense. I don't want their Narnia voodoo mythological nonsense. You say one is fine, the other's not, because the Quran is from the other, whereas the Christian, the Bible, that's our voodoo nonsense, so I want to force that down your throat. But goddamn, get that Quran away from me. Irrational, dogmatic religious beliefs, they don't belong in government, unless there are religious, dogmatic, irrational beliefs. They belong in government. No, they don't. They don't in either case. And in case any of you were wondering, people looked into this, and when you count up the violent passages in the Bible, because you heard them say, ooh, I mean, what kind of tenets are they swearing on here if they put their hand on the Quran? Violence. Goodness gracious. The number of violent passages in the Bible, 842. The number of violent passages in the Quran, 333. Now, don't make the mistake of just declaring, oh, the Bible's worse. There's a difference here in terms of the size of the books as well. So the Quran is much shorter. So actually, as a percentage, there are more violent verses in the Quran. But as a raw number, there are more violent verses in the Bible. And let's face it, I mean, in both religions. So in the Quran, you have an emphasis on charity. You have it's anti-racism. You have the idea of no compulsion in religion. So you could cherry-pick good parts and ignore the bad parts, like with any religion. In the Bible, Jesus is a pacifist and a hippie, and he's a Marxist before Marxism existed. And he said, don't judge and all that stuff. So you could cherry-pick the good parts of that, too. But in both cases, you have books that have hundreds of overtly, brazenly, blatantly violent passages. And these jackasses have a problem with one, but not the other. No, I have a problem with both. With both. And even if, let's say, you know, we have people, you know, swearing in on a religion or a holy book where the doctrine is overwhelmingly flowery and positive, and there isn't a lot of slaughter and massacring like there is in the Quran and the Bible. I still would be against that, too. Why? Because I have a principled belief in secularism, a principled belief in separation of church and state. If you're swearing to uphold the Constitution, here's a wacky idea. Put your hand on the fucking Constitution! I know! Crazy! Crazy! Give me the line, The Witch in the Wardrobe. I want to put my hand on that one. Could I do that? Do we have Green Eggs and Ham around here somewhere, Dr. Seuss? No, don't do any of them. But even if it was on, like, whatever doctrine the Sikhs have, who all they do, peace, 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 or certain versions of Buddhism, peace, 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 even though Buddhists in Myanmar are killing Rohingya Muslims, or what's the other one? Jainism, where they say, it's nothing but peaceful. You can't kill a fly in that. I still don't want you even swearing on that because it's not true. So that's the bottom line. You're swearing on something that makes claims to facts of reality that are incorrect. And no religious doctrine, no dogmatic book should be used when we're talking about law, when we're talking about the justice system or due process or the executive branch or the legislative branch. You can be religious. I believe in freedom of religion. But you can't force that on everybody else through the government, and we shouldn't have religion encroaching on the government, and swearing on a Quran or a Bible or any other holy book is not a good idea. Okay, so again, I'm willing to make that deal, and I want to make that deal. I would argue this is unconstitutional to swear on a Quran or the Bible. And I'll offer them the deal, but are they going to accept it? No, because they're hypocrites. They want to be able to swear in on the Bible, but they don't want anybody to be able to swear in on the Quran. They're not consistent intellectually. Okay. Now I'm going to explain to you why it's possible that Jesus never existed. Story has a fascinating and thought-provoking article by Valerie Tirico on the top five reasons that Jesus probably never existed. So, for those of you who don't know, this is a minority position among experts on this. Most think that he did exist. I mean, of course, him being God is a separate question, that there's zero evidence to that effect. But in terms of whether or not he lived, most say he did live, and some say he didn't live. Now, the evidence that he did live, I mean, very simply to sum it up here, there's a historical record in other Jewish and Christian texts that are from different places that reference him. And the idea is, well, what, you know, how is it that he can be mentioned in different texts that had nothing to do with one another in passing or just outright if he didn't exist? So there's evidence outside of just the Bible, which it's hard to call that evidence. So since he's mentioned in a couple different places, well, it's a fair assumption that he exists. That's the evidence that he does exist. Now let me give you the counterargument here. So first of all, they say there's no first century secular evidence whatsoever that he exists to support the actuality of, this was his real name, I didn't know this, Yeshua ben Yosef elaborates on this in his book on this topic. He said, quote, what sorts of things do pagan authors from the time of Jesus have to say about him? Nothing. As odd as it may seem, there is no mention of Jesus at all by any of his pagan contemporaries. There are no birth records, no trial transcripts, no death certificates. There are no expressions of interest, no heated slanders, no passing references, nothing. In fact, if we broaden our field of concern to the years after his death, even if we include the entire first century of the Common Era, there is not so much as a solitary reference to Jesus in any non-Christian, non-Jewish source of any kind. I should stress that we do have a large number of documents from the time, the writings of poets, philosophers, historians, scientists, and government officials, for example, not to mention the large collection of surviving inscriptions on stone and private letters and legal documents on papyrus. In none of this vast array of surviving writings is Jesus' name ever so much as mentioned. Okay, so there's your first piece of evidence. Now, as I said at the beginning here, in different Jewish and Christian texts, he's mentioned. What specifically? I don't know. I'm not an expert. I'm not a historian. I can't tell you exactly where he is mentioned. But there are some counter texts which mention him. But as they explain, none of them were from pagans, pagans being, I believe, numerically the most at the time. The largest number of people were pagans at the time. So is there a case there that that's pretty solid evidence that he might just be, you know, made up and fit in to the stories because the stories were written well after his alleged death? The second thing they say, the earliest New Testament writers seem ignorant of the details of Jesus' life, which become more crystallized in later texts. Quote, Paul seems unaware of any virgin birth, for example. No wise men, no star in the east, no miracles. Historians have long puzzled over the silence of Paul on the most basic biographical facts and teachings of Jesus. What's more, he never calls the 12 apostles Jesus' disciples. In fact, he never says Jesus had disciples, or a ministry, or did miracles, or gave teachings. Okay, so this is such an issue that other theologians are like, how do we explain, quote, the silence of Paul? So it's been a problem in Christianity for a long time. Where they're like, why doesn't this motherfucker know anything about the dude if he's writing and he's claiming this is all about the dude? You know, you would think that virgin birth would be something that it's a little detail you might want to put in there. But he didn't put it in there. Why? Because, again, the idea goes later on, they made it up. Well, obviously they made it up. But the question is, did a guy even exist at all? And they're saying this hints at no. All right, more. Number three. Even the New Testament stories, as we were just saying, the New Testament, which is supposedly all about Jesus, tells his story and everything, none of it was written at the time he existed. They all wrote it much later on after his death. They say, the Gospels are only accounts of a historical Jesus, contradict each other. Not only that, man, they contradict each other wildly. As do all holy books, by the way. You can find passages that say be super peaceful. You can find passages that say kill everybody in sight. And it's the same thing with Jesus' specific story, so his alleged personal story. Things wildly contradict each other. All right, next, and I believe this is the final one here. Modern scholars who claim to have uncovered the real historical Jesus depict wildly different persons. So this is where they say, even today with all of our science and all of our technology and all of our understanding and all of our research methods and all of our dating processes and all that stuff, they say, even with all that, you have different experts who say, well, if he existed, he was like this. We know he was like this. And then somebody else says, he was like that. No, he was like that. And so they say, quote, they include a cynic philosopher, one description of Jesus, a charismatic Hasid, another, a liberal Pharisee, another, a conservative rabbi, a zealot revolutionary, a nonviolent pacifist, and the list goes on and on and on. So what's my conclusion on it? In all seriousness, I don't know. I'm agnostic on the existence of Jesus. I'm not agnostic as to whether or not he was God or the Son of God. I'm most certainly convinced he wasn't. There's zero evidence that points in that direction. But on whether or not he existed, I don't know. It's possible that the other references in different texts to him, since they were only allegedly Christian or Jewish in nature, that like those were the sources, that they're less credible, and therefore it could still all be made up. Or it could be that those are, you know, since they happened at different places at different times with different people, it could be enough of a verification that he existed, but he obviously is not the Son of God. But here's the case that he didn't exist. It's certainly food for thought, and it's certainly possible that he didn't exist. Okay, next. All right, let's go to making fun of me. Isn't that fun? That's always fun. So let's go to a funny story here. My buddy David Pakman over at the David Pakman Show did one of his Patriot Mail segments. He's chatting with Benjamin Dixon here, who's another up-and-coming liberal commentator. So everybody check out both of their shows. But listen to what was said in this Patriot Mail segment.
Aggressive one. I'm going to warn you, but this, you know, we don't want to shy away from the craziest of the crazy in today's Patriot Mail. Let's take a listen to it.
TYG are retarded as hell. Secular Talk looks like a lesbian, but sometimes he makes a good point. Yep. Zip, zip, zippity. And of course, you're a faggot Jew. Kill yourself, faggot.
That's aggressive, right? I mean, do you get stuff like that? Because that's pretty intense.
Yeah, I get things like that, and I actually love them, so
really,
it's right up my alley.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it never makes you fear for your safety?
No, no, never really makes me feel for my safety. Not yet. I'm sure something will come along.
I don't know what my favorite part of that is. I mean, obviously the part about me, but the, yep, zip, zip, zippity. What the fuck was that? And I have to say, David, it was a nice touch to put, like, the professional announcer voice in there. Oh, that makes it so perfect. I've never been, like, just viciously torn down, but also complimented at the same time. Secular Talk looks like a lesbian. But he makes a good point every once in a while. Thank you? I mean, how do I respond to that? I have to admit, though, hearing that criticism, the initial reaction is, damn, I need to, like, shave my head and grow a really, really thick beard. And this way, nobody will say, oh, yeah, looks kind of like a lesbian. No, they'll go, he's super fucking manly with his caveman face and head and overgrown beard. But no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. Does that count as a microaggression against me? My feelings are hurt. No, seriously, as I heard this, I was thinking, I mean, you guys know me, I've spoken about this before, on the whole topic of microaggressions, I think it's so funny, and I think it's so silly. Not only am I not against microaggressions, I'm not even against macroaggressions, if we can call them that. I'm not against aggressions. You know what aggressions are? It's either funny insults like that, or it's somebody debating with you, or disagreeing with you, or whatever, insulting you. It's life on Twitter. I mean, and to be upset about microaggressions, so what? Somebody made a comment that's like slightly gets under your skin? So I guess we have to call somebody calling you a lesbian or a faggot Jew cunt or whatever he says. That's a macroaggression. No, this, I mean, whatever, man. It's just, it's life online. It is what it is. I think everybody gets it to one extent or another. Obviously, when you're somewhat of a public figure, you get it more. But, no, these guys seem like they took it lightly and with a good heart there, how they're like, you know, yeah, every once in a while I get it. I like it. No big deal. I mean, that's how you got to approach it. So I must say I do have a soft spot for creative. If people get creative with their insults against me, I think I actually, in a weird way, end up liking you. So you look like a lesbian. But every once in a while, decent point. I wish I could find that guy and send him a T-shirt or something. Okay. See if I can squeeze in one or two more here. All right, let me do the Saudi prick. Ehsan Abdulaziz is a Saudi millionaire property developer, and he was brought up on rape charges in London recently. So New York Magazine reports on this, quote, Abdulaziz had already had sex with the 18-year-old's friend, and he said his penis might have been poking out of his underwear when he happened upon the young woman sleeping off a night of drinking. The multimillionaire accounted for his DNA being found in the woman's vagina because she had allegedly seduced him when he was offering her a T-shirt or a taxi ride home. He also said that he had semen on his hands from having sex with the woman's friend earlier. In court, Abdulaziz maintained his innocence, saying, get this, I'm fragile. I fell down, but nothing ever happened. Between me and this girl, nothing ever happened. Okay. He literally argued, I tripped, and my dick went in her vagina. Okay, I'm not a legal expert, but guilty. No, you can't use that counter argument. You can't use that defense. That's the most irrational thing anybody's ever said in the history of ever. I tripped, dick, vagina, happened, slips in. You've never tripped and fallen into a vagina before? I can safely say I haven't. I can't believe this works, but look, I have to be clear here that reading the article on this made me think there's got to be some aspect of this story and of this case that I'm missing. Because this is so irrational and so absurd that either everybody on the jury was bought off, and they're like, okay, you're going to get millions of dollars. Shut the fuck up, let me off, you're going to get millions of dollars. Either they were bought off, or I'm missing something. Because there's no way that the people on the jury all heard just these same facts I did, and they were like, seems like a reasonable defense to me. The old tripped and fell in a vagina. Happened to me once in Nam. No, that doesn't happen ever. So let me just say, I hope I'm missing something here. Because if I'm not, this is one of the most absurd cases in the history of cases. Okay, I'm out of time, guys. I was going to do one more, but I don't have time. I just got the countdown in my ear. I'll save it for tomorrow. It's a good one, I promise. So, everybody could follow on Twitter if you don't already, at Kyle Kalinske. Follow Lilith, who does fantastic work behind the scenes here for Secular Talk and hangs out in the chat with you guys all the time, at Stardust Lilith. And for the holidays, don't forget, keep using our Amazon link. In fact, what I'll do is I'm going to tweet that out and maybe post it on Facebook because the Amazon link is a great way to just show your appreciation for the show, and it doesn't cost you anything. So you just, whenever you buy on Amazon, if you buy through our link, you end up helping us out. I think 5% or 7% of the money comes here. So that's, another a great way to help the show without having to do much. So, all right, guys, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow for an awesome Friday show. Everybody have a good night. Peace.